hosted by your mans, me, Brother G2, National Director of the Journey for Justice Alliance. It's good to see y'all here. Check it, you can reach us at J4J_USA on Twitter. You can also reach us on our Facebook page, Journey for Justice Alliance. And yo, give me a call at 777-9311. Some of y'all know what I mean by that. Once again, world, Obarigani, Otep, Jumbo, peace. What's happening? And what up, though? This podcast focuses on the artistic science of community organizing, and the theme of today's show is Liquid Spirit, Secrets to Parent Organizing in Black and Brown Communities. Too often we hear people say how hard it is to organize, and it is, right? But parents need to get off their butt and all this other stuff. And we wanted to bring a couple of experts on the podcast, folks that do this for real, folks who stuck their feet in the waters of community organizing and didn't jump out the water once the water got hot or it began to get waist deep. These are two folks who have embraced that challenge and I think have a lot to teach about what it means to actually effectively organize parents in our community. So I got two, again, amazing guests here with us today. I've got my brother from another mother, Jalita Bennett, who is the associate director of the Kenwood Oakland Community Organization, longtime grassroots community organizer in the city of Chicago. What's happening, Brother Jalita?
Hey, what's up?
And last and definitely not least, I got my sister from Brick City, Sharon Smith, who is the co-founder of Parents Unified for Local School Education, better known as PULSE. Sister Sharon, it's good to hear your voice. Welcome to the On the Ground podcast.
Thank you very much, Brother G2. I'm happy to be here and excited about this podcast.
Absolutely. So Jalita is a return guest, and we wanted to pair him with our dynamic sister Sharon. And so everybody hold on, because you're going to get the real deal on this podcast today. But check it out. As you know, every week we do member spotlight, and we want to focus on one of our members in the Journey for Justice Alliance, who is doing incredible work to move the work for education justice forward. And the group that I like to highlight today is Breaking Our Chains out of Denver, Colorado. Breaking Our Chains is a multi-generational and actually multiracial group, a Black and Brown group, led by my brother Hasira Sol Ashimu. And Brother Sol, as we call him, is the director of Breaking Our Chains and does incredible work around fighting the school-to-prison pipeline. I've been in sessions with them when they had Latino and Black youth working together, moving the campaign to really stop the suspension of Black and Brown youth, to get police out of our schools, counselors, not cops, that type of work. And it's big work because, you know, Denver is a city that once had a larger African-American population. And today, the Black population in Denver is about 6%. And so gentrification is running rampant in Denver. And Breaking Our Chains is a group that is carving out a space to make sure that our folks are able to remain and grow. One of the biggest campaigns they have right now is a campaign for sustainable community schools, to stop the closing of a historic middle school in Denver, and to begin to expand sustainable community schools throughout the district. So they actually have three or four schools that are interested in becoming sustainable community schools. They have stopped a couple of school closing plans by the district. Then they're doing big work. So I want to send shouts out to Breaking Our Chains, our brother Hasira Sol Ashimu. Just tell them to keep the work going and keep struggling and keep fighting, and we with you, all right? So salute to Breaking Our Chains. So now we want to get to our guests. Again, the theme of our show today is Liquid Spirit, Secrets to Parent Organizing in Black and Brown Communities. We have a definition of community organizing in the Journey for Justice Alliance. We say that it is working with the people directly impacted to build strategy and power to move policy and resources in order to address our issues. Again, working with the people directly impacted to build strategy and power to move policy and resources to address our issues. We understand that community organizing is not about elevating individuals, it's about elevating the voices of the people. We have two people that embody that approach and that philosophy. So I want to start with Sharon. Sharon, can you very quickly just let everybody know who PULSE is and how long you've been doing this work?
So POSE is an acronym for Parents Unified for Local School Education. The group was developed in 2007, 2008, basically from visiting G2 in Chicago to attend a summit for the School Leadership Council. And went back to Newark and say, hey, we need to have parents just as knowledgeable and strong to sit at their local school to stop our schools from closing down. And POSE started there.
I remember that, Shan, when you all came and we had a local school council summit at the University of Illinois in Chicago. And you all have started from basically a small band of parents to now a very influential group in the conversation around improving schools in Newark, New Jersey. So again, Sister Salute, and your co-founder is Brother Johnny Latner. So you all are doing incredible work. So thank you very much. Brother Jaliga, can you share a little bit about the history of the Kenwood Oakland Community Organization and how long you've been doing this work?
So again, thank you for having me on the show. The Kenwood Oakland Community Organization is the oldest Black-led grassroots community organizing social service organization in the city of Chicago. Started in 1965 by a group of clergy who wanted to push back and raise up the voices of marginalized people in a community that was dealing with issues of white flight, a lot of the issues of crumbling schools, dilapidated housing. So fast forward to today, COCO is still fighting the fight around affordable housing, raising a campaign for rent control, working to make sure that community residents surrounding the proposed Obama Presidential Center have a right to stay and are not pushed out. So we're pushing for a benefits agreement. We're also fighting for public education, making sure privatization, charters, and things like that don't just dismantle our public education system. Youth organizing, senior organizing, and pretty much anything that happens in our community, we're there to try to support.
And I want folks to just check it out. So too often in the organizing world, we compete with each other. We don't really think about movement building. And one of the things that I'm proud of as the former education organizer for COCO is that our work has always been to help other Black people organize. We were able to show Sharon and Johnny our work around building local school governance through local school councils. And that inspired them to then go and start POSE. Because before that, Sharon, and correct me if I'm wrong, I don't want to have a middle-aged moment, but you were running a youth organization called YEAR. Is that accurate?
That is correct.
And so from that, my sister went home to Newark and began the work of building POSE. And I think that's what we all should do. We should all be encouraging other Black people around the country and brown people to learn and practice the artistic science of community organizing. Because that's the only way that we're going to be able to win justice in this society where everything we get, we have to fight, claw, and scratch for. So let's jump to some questions real quick. So if I had to ask you, Sharon, I want you to think about this. Mm-hmm. What is your approach to organizing parents?
We feel that our purpose for POSE is to inform, inspire, and ignite parents. And we do that through family engagement, not taking as word of just something that's throwing around saying family engagement, but what does that mean? It means that we are hearing and listening to the stories of the parents and their background because we know that provides valuable information and it also shares experiences that help us organize as a collective, right? And that means that they are a part of the process. And so when we think about how we're going to organize parents and sometimes students who are along with their parents, that we are making sure that we hear the story, we understand the story, and that we are in the grassroots work of those folks who are being impacted by whatever is happening in their community.
Now, sister, I've been to Newark a lot. I've been with you when you've done parent leadership workshops and you were like looking at people who were, you felt were going to become POSE members and lo and behold, they did. I'm thinking about Sister Kenya and folks like that. And so I want to lift up one thing is that one of the things that you do through your leadership, through your the sessions that you do with parents as you're listening to them, is you also help them address their basic needs and concerns, whether it's how to address issues in their school, how to get services for their child. And that actually clears the space for them to think about, one, building a sense of trust with you, but then two, being able to organize around issues that they care about. Would you agree with that?
I agree, because I think as a parent leader, before actually developing this organization, Pulse, I was too a parent who did not know a lot was going on in the district and really didn't feel like I was key to whatever was happening with my five children in school. So I knew that by building this organization that was going to organize parents, it was important for them to understand when they go to a meeting, why they were there, what they were there for, and then what can they provide in that meeting that elevates another parent. And so by giving them knowledge and giving them leadership skills, most of them already have leadership skills, but providing a way to have them to participate in the process was key to developing our organization, because we wanted parents to believe that they were key, not only to their children, but the building of the schools.
I appreciate that. Sister, so Brother Jalita, I'm going to turn the same question over you. What is your approach to organizing parents?
Well, Sharon did such a great job. I mean, ditto. Same thing. Similarly, it's working with folks who are most impacted, not to sound just like, you know, that those are the terms we have to use in grants, but that's real. The people most impacted first. And when we go into school situations where we meet parents at the most, or parents that we might have relationships with in the community, one of the first tasks is to listen. And I think that goes understated in so many situations. We might say that. So in organizing and in general, sometimes people use a rule of, they call it the 70-30 rule, where you listen 30% of the time, and you might engage 30% with maybe questions for understanding. But that doesn't happen a lot with our parents, so that's what we try to start with. And then what we've had most of our success with, as far as our approach to organizing, it has been when parents are in some type of situation, or there's some kind of challenge in their school, or they want something changed, or they have something that they need to really just overcome. And through those fights and those campaigns, the leaders emerge prior to it or during the fight. And when we meet people on the battlefield, as we call it, a lot of those times, those are parents who didn't sign up for this, but they're brought into that fight. And we try to work with those parents to, like Sharon said, work together collectively, because and oftentimes when we meet parents, they're in schools as like one woman show. Usually it's a one woman. And it's that one parent or that those few parents. And some of that is not due to the fact that parents don't want to come up there, or a lot of it is because we know that schools aren't as welcoming to parents, particularly in African American. So our parents are not always welcome. So they're stopped at the gate by the clerk who's staring them down. We've worked, I think, had the most success when we've been able to roll up our sleeves and go back to back and shoulder to shoulder with parents who at the time don't see themselves as parent leaders. But we always know all parents come with wisdom that can help resolve situations. One of the biggest things we work on is just trying to work together and coming up with a collective strategy, and then, you know, working through some of the bumps and bruises that come with organizing to have a successful outcome.
As you all are talking, you inspired me to pull up a quote from the late, great Ella Baker. She said, "Oppressed people, whatever their level of formal education, have the ability to understand and interpret the world around them, to see the world for what it is, move to transform it." You know, we move in that spirit. I was just thinking about, to that point when you talk about standing back to back with parents when they're in the middle of a crisis. Often what we've had to do, you know, if you have an issue at a school, that like there's a school in our neighborhood with a sign that says no parents beyond this point. Like, unbelievable, right? But we organize with the parents at that school outside of that school facility. So sometimes you have to create an alternative space where, you know, you don't have the principal or whatever the official is looming, or the, whether it's the property manager or whoever looming over you, you can actually go in your own space and begin to build a collective sense of our own worth, like a higher sense of our own worth and our own value and our capacity to win some. That's important because there's a concerted effort to teach us that we are not able to win, right? Whether it's the way that middle management treats us. And if you think about it, property managers, you know, school principals, what are they but middle management? And so often their work is to manage us. And so we have to often take ourselves in a different space and organize so that, you know, we don't have the burden of other people's low expectations stopping us from thinking about how we're going to win this fight. I want to come with another question, and that is, how do you build leaders in your work? Jalita, why don't you start? How does a person go from they mad because, you know, they got a slumlord in their building to someone who then puts on that maroon shirt and says, I'm a leader with the Kenwood Oakland Community Organization, and you can count on them to carry out work?
When we realize that everybody comes with some ability to be a leader, and their leadership style has to be brought out, or their leadership, whatever space that they want to be a leader in, or they can be a leader in, comes out. So I say that to say that you're going to have most parents coming who don't see that. They're not looking for that. We're looking for it because we're organized, and we know we need more people in the fight, and we know that when the community has more people that stand up and that step out, you know, we're stronger. So the first way we do it, I think, is that when we're in these schools, or when we're in the fight, or when we go to a parent committee meeting, you really listen to the concerns to see, okay, how can we help those parents with the stumbling block of a bully principal? How can we help those parents with a stumbling block of a district that says one minute we want parent inclusion, but they have all these policies at the local level that alienate parents? How do we help them get through that muck? Or how do we help them with a national policy that comes down from the Department of Education that says you have to take all these doggone tests when only two of them are counting for, you know, something important? So if that makes sense, we come in where we fit in, where we can be an assistant. From that, I think the leaders, they kind of gravitate toward either, oh, I like the style of what Coco has. I like the fact that that information helped us at this point. But it's a constant connection. And the last thing I'll say about this is that we don't leave parents on an island by themselves, or we don't vanish and disappear. And we don't use parents. So when I say that, I'll start with the last one. Sometimes organizations or agencies are in these schools, and oftentimes it's not a two-way street. It's just the agency needing something, and the parents oftentimes are just used for that moment, and then they're left. So COCO has been a constant presence. We are not there for a grant. This is our neighborhood. Most of us live in the neighborhood. So that has helped us when we look at leaders. The leaders know we're going to be there.
That's right.
They know they can come back to us. So people have gravitated to COCO because they know they can come there for training. They know they can come there for other resources. But the same thing is that we have not made it a one-way street. Mm-hmm. We oftentimes give more help than we get something that's, you know, turned back into COCO's organizing work. You know, but the leaders come through us being present, being consistent, and then us also making sure that it's a mutual relationship, that COCO doesn't just get something out of it. And then the parents emerge based on the issue or based on a moment. They might have just seen us at a rally. Oh, I'm going to get involved. And then that just we constantly try to nurture that. And then the last thing is we provide leadership opportunities. We shouldn't be in front as the organizers. The parents are the most impacted. It's their voices that need to be heard and developed and nurtured.
Sharon, you want to add anything to that, sister?
Yes, I want to add on the last comment Jalita just said about just allowing the leaders to lead, right? Basically, just providing opportunities for them to lead. And that's key, you know, because I was thinking as he was talking about one of our now organizer, but one of our leaders, Yolanda, she came into the organization as a leader, but to use her skill and ability to push what we were at that point pushing for community schools and for her to take on the leadership role to understand exactly what is a community school, and was able to not only provide that information while she was with our organization Pulse, but when she was outside of that environment, she was still able to talk to schools and superintendents and assistant superintendents and explain what is a community school. And so when you create leaders, you are creating leaders that have the ability to use their own skills to move forward. And I think that's what we look at when we're trying to inform. That's why we try to inform, because with the knowledge, then they're more comfortable with their leadership role in explaining and pushing for whatever they need to push about, whether it's a school that does not have a good lunch, whether it's a problem with bullies. It's providing that leadership skill. Yeah,
absolutely. I'm just reflecting on what I know about you both. you know, Jalita, I'm just thinking about your work with Involve Seniors for Justice and how you took this group of seniors and developed them to the fact where they were inspired to start basically their own organization that is like the senior committee for the Kenwood Oakland Community Organization. One of the stories about Involve Seniors is there's a slumlord in Chicago who I guess masquerades as a civil rights leader by the name of Reverend Leon Finney in Chicago. And Jalita, do you want to share the story about how your leaders went to the church, or do you want me to share it? It's up to you, brother.
I'll tell a short story about it. Basically, what Jesus is referring about is that seniors who live in property that was managed by, I want to put the reverend in front of him, that's a new thing, Leon Finney, who basically has lorded over slum senior housing in the Black community for some years. They got fed up. They came to COCO. They brought these issues to us. And many of these seniors, like I said, were brought in by some other leaders who worked with COCO. But what we did was they organized strategies to try to raise the attention and get the attention of Leon Finney after trying to work with his staff. To no avail, they tried to call the property manager. They blew him off. They tried to call other people. So we found out that we already knew this. He was calling himself a preacher. He has this church that he stole. I'm going to be real blunt. This guy is really bad. So they said, okay, let's go pay him a visit. Now, we respect the house of God. So our seniors, all church-going, God-loving, fearing people, they organized themselves in a little caravan. We paid them a visit. We sat through the service, and to the point before the service, a group of them walked up real smoothly, gave him a letter. He was sitting in the front row when he came in. It was not disruptive. We didn't do anything. We sat back down because he knew they were connected to COCO. He knows how COCO get out. So long story short, this man made his whole sermon about how these people in this church are going to try to disrupt my service, and I dare them, and da da da. And we kind of smiled it off. We had already done what we came there to do, which was let him know this was a warning. We didn't disrupt his service. He disrupted his own service. Because, one, how do you make your sermon about something like this when you have all this other pressing concerns that must be, you know, spread? So long story short, that particular day was the day we got on his radar and things started to change. He started to be a little more approachable about the issues and concerns of bully management, rat infestation, you know, all of different, you know, concerns and things that come with a slumlord, to the point where he fired some management. The seniors got a lot of victories from a lot of things, but this was a course of one of the actions we took. We did not disrupt the service. Like I said, we just left. He left. And he disrupted his own service. But the point is, they felt good about that action because, one, the intended results were that, one, they would get this man's attention, and two, he would change some of the conditions they were living under. And it did happen.
And this group emerged out of, you know, COCO being responsive and being consistent and standing there in that midst of crisis where seniors are elders who should be being treated like the people who paid their dues like they deserve were being treated like nothing. You know, Jalita stood with them. And now this group is like a powerhouse group. And one of the leaders from that effort, and this is something else I want to connect to you all's leadership development work, one of the parent leaders from that effort is now the senior organizer for the Kenwood Oakland Community Organization, Brother Alfonso Jones. And he walked in the door as a parent leader. Now he's a dynamic parent or senior organizer. And Sharon, one of the memories I have, sister, remember we used to talk about, well, can Pulse do a meeting with 50 people? So they had a community meeting around sustainable community schools and Pulse's overall vision and asked me to come. So I went down to Newark, New Jersey. It was pouring down raining, and they had a meeting in the basement of this church. And I go down there, and it's about 60 people down there. And what was amazing to me was that your leaders were running different workshops during that meeting. Mm-hmm. And I watched Yolanda. This is when we had talked about sustainable community schools for like a year. And Yolanda was teaching about each pillar of sustainable community schools with like a high level of expertise. And I was just, I just looked at y'all, and I'd be honest, I got choked up. I was like, man, y'all doing it. And so the thing that I think is powerful about Pulse is that you have a cadre of highly informed, highly knowledgeable, and courageous parent leaders. And so I just wanted to commend both of y'all for that work, man, because that's an example. And I just want people to listen. Jalita said something a little earlier that was so important about how we don't use parents, because sometimes what you find is that parent leaders or organizations use parents for their agenda, but there's no reciprocity. When me and Jalita experienced this both early on in our, you know, when we were younger organizers, when you had what was called school reform organizations in Chicago. And these were downtown-based groups whose talking points were right, but their approach to developing parents was all about them parenting parents and parents following their agenda. And these groups were often ran by white people. It was interesting, as COCO began to emerge as an organization that had its own sense of what education justice was, those groups saw us as a threat. They saw us as a threat because we were actually walking with parents who had shaped their own agenda for what education is. So they were like, we don't need you to speak for us. We can speak for ourselves, right? And so that piece is important, that, we're not here to use our people. We're not, you know, in other words, we're not here to be poverty pimps. We're here to make sure that we provide a space and support for parents and people in the community to organize around the things they care about. I have one more question for you all. If you can offer somebody some do's and don'ts of organizing parents, what would they be? And I'm going to let y'all just round robin this. Y'all can just throw stuff out. So let's start with the do's. What were some things that you would say you must do if you're going to organize parents?
I would say the first thing would be listen. Because one, people need to be heard, but their stories are so much important and so much, it adds so much value to the work that you're doing with them.
Yes, ma'am. Jalita?
That was my first do, so Sharon stole that one. Dang. No, that's great. I would say reflect as you're listening or after you're listening, after you heard what's been said, on experiences that can really, I think, move people to action or move people to getting involved or connections, because sometimes we're here to things, but we don't know kind of, okay, what's the next step? Some of that comes from figuring out, okay, whatever that concern that parent just brought to me, how can I either base that in some experiences that other parents may have or some knowledge that we are familiar with to be able to move past to the next step? Because sometimes the information comes and it's an overload or it's something that at that moment we can't do anything about. But it's more so like affirming to that parent, that's real. Your issues are real. Mm-hmm. Because I don't have the answer right now, maybe, but I do know, I want to affirm for you that I personally feel that, you know, that's something that is not just worth listening to, but I want to figure out a way to help you take some action on it if that's what you so choose to do. So I don't know how clear that sounds, but it's really just going beyond what happens in the beginning, which is that we may have to say, okay, well, at this moment, I can't deal with it. But just giving them a little more hope that, no, we're going to deal with it. I'm going to do something with it. We're going to go beyond me just saying you brought that point. You know, it's hard to do that in the moment, too, because say you're in a big public meeting. How do you do that? But parents, you can lose them if they don't feel that. So that's another do, I think.
To kind of wrap that piece, one of the things we tell people that there's four things if you're going to be an organizer that you have to think about. You have to have humility, which means you got to realize that you ain't better, excuse my slang, but you ain't better than nobody else, right? Mm-hmm. Nobody cares about your title. Nobody cares about how much money you make. Nobody cares about the letters after your name. You are not better than the people that you're working with. That's one. Mm-hmm. Two, listening, as has been said, you have to listen to people. And Jalita's piece around reflection, I'm going to tie into this word. Validate the experiences of your people. So when your folks say that, you know, they don't respect parents in this place and they treat us like we're nothing, don't try to add clarity to what the parents are saying. Get the clarity from what they're saying. Understand the clarity from what people are telling you. They're telling you in most cases how they're being made to feel, how they're being treated. And then the last thing, as been mentioned earlier, is consistency. We can't be fair weather organizers. You know, I remember as young men, we used to do home visits. And I remember one time me and Jalita did a home visit like 11:30 or midnight around his little brother who unfortunately is no longer with us. But his mother was like, you better come over here. Because if you don't come over here, I'm going to kill him. And before you know it, we at his brother's house at 12:30 at night, you know, trying to you know, mediate the situation with his family. But those types of pieces, like when we worked in schools, one of the things that I think gave us weight was the fact that rain, sleet, snow, or shine, the young people knew we would be there. They knew it, whether we were sick, or he wasn't feeling well, we would be in front of that class ready to go. And that piece built a sense of, you know, trust. And so those are some do's. I want to thank you all for that. And I just wanted to add my own little two cents. What about some don'ts? What are some things you would tell people to make sure you do not do when it comes to organizing parents?
I would say don't walk into a room thinking you already have the solution. You know, because as organizers, you've heard so many stories and you sometimes can, you know, think, okay, well, this is probably what needs to happen. But you have to tie it into the experience of those people. You're in a different environment, different place. It's important that you don't be quick to make those decisions about what the solution should be.
Teach. Brother Jalita, any thoughts?
Be careful of the traps that are there for division between parents getting into personal beefs with each other or being pitted against each other. Sometimes administrators or staff in schools are great at doing that. This parent is just the favorite, but they create, and or it just happens. So the interpersonal beefing. The other thing is we've experienced this a whole lot. Watch out for the goodies. I want to be real clear. There's a mayoral candidate that's running in Chicago, for people that don't know, who was famous for telling people that on the side, if you play right, basically if you sell your people out, there's goodies. So Coco being one of those groups that would not ever sell our people out, we were told that, but that's often how they try to divide parents also. Many of the schools try to neutralize parent organizing by offering the parent a job. Take the job. You need to work with your parent. Sometimes they do that because they feel that would tie the hands, you'll be more loyal to when your check is coming. So those some don't. It's how to avoid getting into those trap bags, because those are traps to me that sometimes divide the community. I'll stop there.
I hope people listening to this are appreciating the wealth of wisdom that you all are getting from my amazing guests, my sister Sharon Smith and my brother Jalita Bennett. I can add one more. You know, as organizers, and I've made this mistake, full disclosure, when you get a parent leader that might be good with the gift of gab, or youth leader that's good with the gift of gab, whenever there's a press conference, you get them the mic. And what ends up happening is that person can begin to believe that it's not the organization that's the power, it's them that's the power. And so I say, beware the creation of movement superstar, because that in itself will create division within your organization, right? So I think it's important that, you know, one of the things that I tell people, and we work in J4J, I scribe many of the meetings, right? Because no one care about my title. The title is just a responsibility, but it's never about the elevation of an individual. It's about the fact that we're powerful together. So it's really important to make sure that when you're developing leaders, that people are willing to do work. And that work could be everything from setting up chairs. It could be from opening up the meeting. It could be from sitting at the sign-in sheet table. It could be calling elected officials to try to confirm them for the meeting. That you engage your leaders in all the different things that it takes to make something go. And you reinforce the message as the organizer that all of our roles are important and that we're stronger together. I remember when I was a brand new organizer with COCO, I was bringing in folks that I worked with on the local school council, and they wouldn't say, I'm a leader with the Kenwood Oakland Community Organization. They would just say, I'm from Fuller School, or I'm from Diet School, or I'm from Revis Elementary School. And my work was to form this group that would help them build a sense of ownership over the organization, that it made it possible to bring them all together. And that was my charge early on as the education organizer for COCO. So, you know, there's some good do's and don'ts. And with that, are there any closing words you'd like to add?
Yes, I would just add that understand that there are forces that don't want grassroots folk to organize. I think we all know that. They're real from the political structures. They're real from the craft and the barrel syndrome. They're as real from us having low self-esteem and low self-confidence. But notice that when we have got together, we have saved schools like Diet High School in Chicago. We have done things like getting the right to vote back in cities in New Jersey for local schools. We've gotten things done because we are the ones who really hold the power. They have a lot of interest in us not knowing that we have the power. Like keeping folks ignorant of thinking that we can make change. But the change happens when regular, ordinary people do extraordinary things.
Sister Sharon?
I'm trying to think of something besides just one thing that you said that really connects with me is humility, right? having humility in organizing and understanding that we are all in this together, that we are, no matter whether we have a GED or a PhD, that we are all fighting the same fight. And when it comes down to who we are, Black and brown, that's exactly how people will see us. They're not going to see those degrees. And so humility is very important when we're trying to help our communities develop and grow.
Well, on behalf of the On the Ground podcast, I'm going to thank you all for sharing the wealth of knowledge and your real on the ground experiences with our people today. I trust that our audience is appreciative of this class we had on parent organizing. And I really want to thank you both. And in closing, I want to say that I believe that both of you all are the embodiment of this quote by our late great warrior, Mama Ella Baker. She said that, "I have always thought that what is needed is the development of people who are interested not in being leaders as much as developing leadership in others." I think that you all embody that quote. I want to send both of you much love and respect. And thank you all for being on the Ground podcast.
Thank you, Brother G2.
Thank you. Thank you.
Yes, sir. Now, on to our closing. Most shows, being a veteran MC myself, we always want to bring some hip-hop forward. But as I told you all in the beginning, we do not discriminate on the On the Ground podcast. So there is a jazz vocalist that I'm sure you all know of, a brother by the name of Gregory Park, a beautiful, soulful brother who makes music that one of my favorite songs that I'm going to play for you all one day. You can check it out yourself. It's called Take Me to the Alley. I mean, it's a beautiful song, man. I mean, I ain't no punk, but I listen to the song and I almost tear up every time I listen to it. But he's got another song called Liquid Spirit. And what he's talking about is that spirit is a collective thing. Do you notice that Jalita and Sharon didn't rehearse? They didn't have a session where, you know, they answered questions and prepared answers. They're real organizers that move from a Black perspective. And because of that, there's unity, there's linkage, there's a spirit that connects us. So Liquid Spirit talks about, let that flow through you. Don't be afraid of it. Don't be afraid of that lion that's inside of you. Let it roar. This song that we're going to close out today is by the genius, our brother Gregory Parker, Liquid Spirit. Two-time Onana, everybody. Peace. Talk to you soon. Thank you for joining the On the Ground podcast.
The people are thirsty because of man's unnatural hand. Watch what happens when the people catch wind, when the water hits the banks of that hard, dry land. Clap your hands now. Go ahead and clap your hands now. Clap your hands now. Go ahead and clap your hands now. Get ready for the wave. It might strike like a final flood. The people haven't drank in so long, the water won't even make mud. After it comes, it might come with a steady flow. Grab the roots of the tree down by the river. Dip your cup when your spirit's low. Clap your hands now. Go ahead and clap your hands now. Clap your hands now. Clap your hands now. Dip down and take a drink and fill your water tank. Dip down and take a drink and fill your water tank.